Hello and welcome to the latest episode in T2RL Talks. In this episode, we're following up on our recently published report into Airline Irregular Operations Management. This report, subtitled A Roadmap for Faster Recovery, Lower Costs and Improved Customer Services, lifts the lid on what's been changing in airline irregular operations management and looks at various approaches airlines can follow to make sure that they're adapting their capabilities in line with the changing operating environment and with developments in technology. But with me today are its two authors to delve a little deeper into that topic. Jim DeYoung, amongst other things, spent 20 years in airline operations with United Airlines, including his role as VP of Network Operations. And now, as well as partnering with T2RL, Jim works with carriers all over the world, helping them to improve operational efficiency. Ira Gershkov will be no stranger to people who've interacted with T2RL operations in the past or been to our conferences. Ira has also spent time at United, but also at American Airlines, where he was Director of Operations Analysis. He has worked on the product side at Sabre. He holds patents in operational systems design and has been an airline CIO. So I think between our distinguished guests today, we've got some very rich experience indeed. So just thinking back actually over the last 6 months or so, it feels like barely a week has gone by where there hasn't been some big air travel disruption event, from systems failures to extreme weather events, from industrial action to mass flight cancellations. Is this some sort of Baader-Meinhof style frequency illusion, or has the operating environment just fundamentally become more challenging?
I would say, yes, it's become more challenging, and there are a lot of reasons for that. The pandemic obviously had a very large effect on airline operations, because at the beginning of it, demand collapsed to near zero for many of the carriers around the world. And faced with a financial disaster, many of them began to have layoffs and offer early retirements to some of the line people who were frankly weren't needed during the pandemic. When traffic began to pick up again, at first there were plenty of people still around, but then as we got through the pandemic and demand started to pick up to near normal levels, it took a couple of years. Then suddenly. There was a lot of pent up demand, and a lot on those people who were either laid off or retired in the early days now weren't available, and there was a crisis of staffing, and it affected all of the pilots, flight attendants, mechanics, crew schedulers, operations controllers, everything there. And that's been the nature of the problem since then. And add to that the issues of global warming and a lot more frequent and more serious weather events that had occurred in the past added to it as well.
Okay, so on the problem side, we've got sort of more extreme weather events, and then on the solution side, there's been a sort of a brain drain and a loss of skills and competencies, and presumably also affect things like air traffic control, yeah, Airports, everybody in the chain that makes planes fly. Is that fair?
Yeah, Bert, it's Jim, and thanks again for having me on the podcast. Yeah, I think one of the things that the airlines are struggling with today is just what you mentioned, the dynamics. You know, they can manage their internal staff and manage that accordingly. But I think what you're starting to see now is a lot of external factors being layered on top of it. So from air traffic controllers to ground handling agents, just all across the spectrum, even, you know, Customs and Border Patrol and TSA, there are staffing shortages throughout the industry. And, you know, you may be able as an airline to solve for that with your, you know, reduced pilot reserves and a little less aggressive operating strategy. But you have all these ancillary things that are also impacting you that you can't really forecast. And so connection times, for example, with passengers going from international to domestic, are probably doubling just based on the fact that there's not enough customs agent in an airport to process. And so that just compounds to regular operations. And it's going to be incumbent upon the airlines to really make sure they partner with their vendors and suppliers to get that whole picture when they go into a regular operation?
Other than the, I think the sort of the extreme weather events that Ira called out and are perhaps the staffing levels that make us less able to deal with problems, are there new causes that we weren't experiencing prior to the pandemic in terms of things that are disrupting us?
Yeah, I think, Bert, to some extent, to Ira's earlier point, when we started down the recovery path, big financial losses in the aviation sector. And so airlines had a pretty aggressive strategy in terms of fleet utilization, minimum scheduled ground time, all of those things that airlines are slowly starting to back off. But, still there is, a long recovery ahead in terms of financial impact of COVID. And so airlines are going to be reluctant to pull aircraft out of the schedule to add ground time for recovery. You may have heard, just recently with the United Airlines issue at Newark, they came out and said that they're going to try and reduce some flying in Newark. Obviously, they don't want to take a significant cut, so they'll probably do gauge changes. But those types of things are pretty rare right now. And I think as airlines progress through this summer and into the winter, they're going to have to be rethinking, the structural elements, ground time, aircraft utilization, build some more wiggle room until they can get this staffing and all the other external factors kind of in check.
Is there a sense that the anatomy of these events has changed, that they're somehow sort of bigger, that there are longer lasting effects being felt? I'm thinking particularly of the Southwest crewing issue, which seemed to spiral out of control really rapidly.
I think there are some other factors going on, which in the past have not been that significant, but now suddenly are. And one that comes to mind is at all the airlines that we know of, there's very little time spent on, let's call it, training. Sports teams at every level practice situations that may or may not ever come up. We found that airline dispatchers, operations controllers, crew schedulers don't have, and we don't know of any airline that allocates any time for that sort of reviewing what happened in the past, trying different things on a practice level where there's no risk of making a mistake. We think that is something that is desperately needed at this point, is to begin to have a structure of possible control actions that can help things. They need to be practiced offline when there's no pressure and no chance that a mistake will cause a meltdown in the operation.
So is this like simulated events to
yes, really exactly.
Bottom out the operational response and all of the potential failure modes, that kind of thing?
Right. And to some extent, that requires to a great extent, this requires the ability to simulate an irregular operation on an offline basis, where you can cascade the events that happen and the control actions that are taken and see what the result is and see whether if something similar to that came up again, would you want to handle it the same way or would you want to make an adjustment?
And is that sounds like something that airlines could start to invest in relatively quickly.
Yeah. And Bert, we're starting to see some airlines make that request of their vendors. A few of the airlines that I'm working with now have reached out to their vendors for a sandbox sort of setup in their operations tools that they could set up and say they need to put 50 cancels in. And what would that look like in terms of crew recovery and aircraft recovery? So I think those things are coming. I think, to Ira's earlier point, just on, the brain drain, if you will, in op centers, it just made this even more crucial. The airlines knew they were going into, potential long-term staffing issues, from pilots and crew schedulers and ops controllers. COVID just accelerated that. And so with a lot of that experience leaving the operations centers, it is really incumbent upon the airlines, as Ira pointed out, to train aggressively. And in addition, take advantage of advances in technology and be able to simulate these massive events.
And to add to that, the people who were lost as a result of the financial downsizing during the pandemic tended to be the most senior people, close to retirement, most experienced people out there. So that when things started up again, you were short dispatch managers, you were short captains, you were short the very people who had the most expertise. Those were the jobs that were most needed.
This sounds like a lot of this actually is planning and preparedness in order to improve response in the heat of the moment. Where are the benefits coming from? Are these likely to come from people and process, or are we looking to technology? Is this sort of machine learning kind of arena?
It's all of the above.
Right.
Yeah. You have to make improvements in all of them. The performance will mirror the weakest link in the chain. And so I think all of them need some attention.
Okay. So this is smart testing and stress testing everything end to end.
It really, yeah, it's offline in a no pressure environment, be able to simulate situations and deciding whether your action that you took on a simulated basis was good, bad, or indifferent, making adjustments accordingly. That's certainly one of the things that's needed, I think, and can be done in the short term. The effects may be long term, but the practices can be in the short term and be extended to the operation in general.
Yeah, just to piggyback on Ira's points, Bert, you know, one of the things that, you know, as we talked at the top of the podcast, we talked about the dynamics of irregular operations just changing based upon staffing, worsening weather. You know, airlines, you know, have had in the op centers playbooks. You know, if the weather was striking their hub in the form of a thunderstorm or a snowstorm, they had a playbook, and you know, that was tried and true. What airlines need to do now is rethink all of that. You know, the wiggle room you have in the schedule for recovery, the reserve pilots you and flight attendants you may have to fly extra flying, you know, post irregular operations, they're just not there. And so the playbooks now have to be adjusted towards much more proactive planning. And to your point, start to evolve their technology, not only for that simulation or sandbox functionality, but also start to incorporate machine learning. You know, in the operations center, I managed operations centers for 20 plus years, and you would rely on your expertise to predict, you know, what the arrival rate in an airport would be. And you still do that to some extent, but with worsening weather events that last longer, to the staffing challenges that air traffic control has, it's getting harder to predict. And so you have to be much more conservative heading into irregular operations. And then you have to have the rigor post irregular operations to get your lessons learned and incorporated for the next round of storms.
Presumably then also, this is going to require everybody to up their game a bit. I mean, the whole point about airline operating environments is that they're largely shared environments. It's no good if one airline can move real quick in a disruption. Everybody in the chain has to be able to adapt quickly, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We saw that with the Southwest Airlines holiday period issue, where, you know, they were, you know, having to cancel large amounts of flights close in. And many airline staff, pilots and flight attendants, were relying on Southwest to get to their own flights and work. That led to other airlines being forced to cancel. The other thing that's going to be important globally, as we look, you know, especially at this air traffic controller shortage, we need transparency, you know, from ANSPs, government agencies, in terms of what staffing is going to look like. We can't have surprises of, yep, we're going to be short air traffic controllers today. Or, you know, as we're watching now and, you know, with bated breath, watching Eurocontrol possibly be going on strike. Yeah, we have to have transparency so we can plan for those things.
And is that kind of transparency is then the kind of thing that would then inform us in terms of being able to build simulations? I mean, is a Eurocontrol air traffic controller strike something you could build a simulation around?
Yeah, absolutely. And I've worked with a few vendors on that type of software. Still in its infancy, you get some predictability with the software, but to your earlier point, you know, once we start to build data and have a database and say, okay, if this FER is closed or restricted throughput, here's generally what happens. Here's what they predict is going to happen. Here's what the actuals are. Building that machine learning database to respond to regular operations is just going to help airlines and their customers.
Machine learning as a solution generally has to have a good data set to learn from. What, in your experience, what is the quality of the operational data that airlines actually have to work with?
I'll kick it off, and I know Ira's got a lot to say on this too. It varies by airline, but I think one of the problems airlines have with operational data is much of their data is still siloed. So you would have your flight information, your out-off in times in one database, while the maintenance information is in another database, the crew information is in another database. And Ira and I have talked about this at length, but Ira, I'm sure you want to chime in on
it. Operational data, what we find is a bit of an unpleasant surprise, is that you have three basic pillars in the operation that have to be in sync. And those are the aircraft flows, the crew schedules, that is, crew go from one flight to another, and the passenger itineraries, most particularly connecting passengers, when they're going from one flight to another. Maybe their first flight's late. Does that mean they misconnect to their second flight? And what we found, which wasn't really a surprise, but the impact really, I think, was a bit of a surprise, is that these three were all developed independently in different time schedules and IT eras, and don't talk to each other. And so it's left to the human operations controller to sort of guess what the impacts are, or to project in their mind what the impacts are. My experience is that pretty much everybody can look one step ahead. Very few people can look two steps ahead. Nobody can look three steps ahead. Being able to sort of project through what the impact is of a particular event is quite important. And for the most part, people do it imperfectly, if at all.
To be more like these chess grandmasters who can see like 10 steps ahead.
Yeah, that's right. One of the first things that we think should be done is what I call a look ahead capability, which is the idea that if the operations controller does nothing, what will be the impact on the all future flights for the rest of the day? You don't really have to look beyond one day, the current day, because at most airlines, there aren't many night flights. And so the night period provides a large window of time where the ops personnel can catch up. You need to worry about all the rest of today and maybe the originating flights tomorrow, because sometimes if the crew arrives an hour or two late, they may not have enough rest in order to take the flight out. That's not a huge problem, but it happens fairly frequently. There's a need to bring these three data main databases together to be able to work in sync, and that's a fairly substantial IT project that the airlines and the airline vendor system vendor community need to work out solutions for over the long term.
Is this a product yet, or does it still mainly have the feel of an IT project?
That's a great question, Bert. I think it's still a project. You know, I was working with an airline as they were working on, I guess they call it a data lake, where they could take operational data and process it real time and take it from a myriad of different inputs. Still in a project, still in its infancy, but holds a lot of promise, you know, as a way to aggregate all of these disparate data sources and give solutions to frontline operations people. But, you know, that needs to be mirrored across the airline in multiple different systems. You know, if you were to look at, you know, Ira's example of a crew going late into an overnight flight, yeah, they may have a rest issue in the following morning, but that airplane could have been scheduled for overnight maintenance as well. And now that, you know, what they were hoping was 10 hours of ground time is now down to 6. And now we're going to have to do an airplane swap. And that airplane swap, though, we're going to have to do a down gauge. That's going to lead to some misconnecting or denied boarding customers. So all of those things need visibility and addressing. And to Ira's point, the operations managers will try to pull all of this data from multiple different systems. But really, to get at the heart of this, we need them in a common system and some machine learning on top of it.
Ira talks about look ahead. And I know I've had conversations with him in the past about planning Slack as a discipline into your operations. I mean, how much of the problem space is amenable to proactivity versus reactivity? Is there low-hanging fruit if we can just react faster and better? Or is it really got to start with the working ahead of yourself?
I think it's a bit of both. You know, obviously you want to be as proactive as possible, but not err on the side of over-conservatism approaching regular operations. You know, that can be costly if you get the weather timing wrong and, you know, you've got blue skies and you've got, you know, a ton of canceled flights. But it's a delicate balance of, you know, trying to find and thread that needle. There are certain structural things, though, that airlines can do, and I've worked with airlines on this, where, you know, certain flights generally eat up more block time due to air traffic control or due to long taxi. And so rather than a peanut butter approach where every flight gets all this added block, you can do it targeted. And it's a little more amenable to the revenue management folks, basically taking a scalp to the schedule versus a hatchet. It's a little better in their eyes.
I'll add a story, you know, from my earlier in my career when getting into a discussion with my boss about how much slack do we really need in the schedule. He pointed out to me that, you know, let's say you need 5 more minutes, and you're adding that every day. You may only need it twice a month, and you can't predict which two days out of the month you're going to need it. So you really need to be careful when you kind of when you're adding slack. You're adding cost. And what are you getting for that cost? So that's a tightrope that every airline has to walk. And I think part of the answer, or large part of the answer, is you need to add your slack. The best place to add it is ground time at the airport between the arrival and the departure of a particular airplane. I think that's where it's most useful, because if you adding it to the block time of the flight, doesn't do much for you, because you don't have much control over that. Once the airplane leaves the gate, they're under air traffic control supervision and all of the thousands of events that can occur that day to affect that are all in play. Ground time, it's your airport and your airplanes. You have some control there. That's where the emphasis ought to be. But again, you're adding it every day. Be careful and do it with some thought.
We talk a lot about the network and the fleet and the schedule and so on, but is it my imagination, or does there seem to be a lot of pain in crewing at the moment? And is that a new thing? Is that a COVID thing? You know, the crewing just seems to come up time and time again recently. What's happening there, and what are we seeing developing in terms of new approaches?
A little bit here, and then I'll let Jim add to it as well. The crew is the most difficult part of managing the operation, because unlike airplanes, people need rest. You need a full crew or you can't operate the flight. And you can also have crew coming from many different directions, different places, so that it's possible. And for example, if you have a crew of 2 pilots and 4 flight attendants, but one of the flight attendants is a reserve and they flew yesterday and they're going to go over a particular monthly limit, you may be illegal for one person on the crew if the flight goes late. So the crew tends to be the most difficult part. And I think one of the things airlines can do is put more effort into keeping the crews together for their assignments. That does sacrifice some utilization, but it's not too bad. And it certainly helps when things go awry. And you'd like to keep the crew together when there's an irregular operation.
Just a couple points to add on to Ira's. You know, so we knew there was a pilot shortage years ago, just in terms of growth, the barriers to becoming a pilot financially, the hours requirement, all of those things, you know, kind of conspired to set up a, specifically for pilots, a staffing shortage. And you're seeing, you know, regional carriers now having to cut service to the point they just do not have the pilots to fly. Airlines are taking, you know, some aggressive approaches, building their own training academies, partnering for long-term contracts with pilots, starting with their express partners. In Europe, you obviously have the multi-crew pilot license, which helps to alleviate some of that burden. But one of the things that, you know, when we were digging into this this paper, getting data around, not only did we have the pilot shortage coming, but essentially COVID knocked a year and a half to 2 years off of all new pilot training. The fact that you're in a small airplane with a flight instructor, you can't socially distance. Classroom things were not happening. And now all of a sudden now you've got an increased pilot demand with about almost 2 years of a training gap. And so right now, in the very short term, we've got a much bigger problem in that our anticipated pilot availability is reduced just based due to COVID.
There was already a problem. The work was underway to create a solution, and even that has now been delayed by 18 months to 2 years because of COVID. Yeah.
Yeah. And to Ira's point on, keeping crews together, managing the operation, that's one of the big things. I would always go back to the financial analysts and crew planners, just knowing that one delay could delay three flights rippling as the crew splits up. Where airlines, I think, can put some focus in this, one of the things, I would always get back when I would go to the planning team was, this is too costly. We need to optimize the pilots and the flight attendants independently. And I can understand that, purely from a labor contract and just their cost structure. However, airlines haven't done a good job of managing the cost of delay or the cost of defect. And I think there's an opportunity there for airlines and their financial analysts, their operations analysts and operations team, sit down and try to figure out what the cost of a minute of delay is, what the cost of the cancellation is, because that will then arm the operations people with some data to say, look, if we could pair flight attendants and pilots together, that could save 1,500, delays a month, right? Get some financial data behind that. And that also would help them funding software and technology advancements. That's what's one of the problems within the operations world is how do you justify the spend? And especially when all that spend is for a rainy day and not the majority of time.
To add to Jim's point, When you deliberately schedule your airline to keep the crews together, I look at it as insurance. Yes, it's costing you a little bit more up front, but the benefit is if something goes awry, it's much easier to recover when the crew stays together. So, think of it as your health insurance for the crew reliability. Is pay a little bit up front. It's really not bad. It's on the order of 0.5% to 1% of the cost, but you come out ahead when things go south.
Aside from the shortages that we talked about, to what extent are we suffering from, there's a sense that as we've recovered from COVID, the network and the capacity that we're operating now is not the network and capacity we manpowered planned for before COVID. So to what extent is it just, I haven't got the crew and the resources in the right places to fly the network I need to operate now? And is there going to be a lag while there's an adjustment there?
Yeah, absolutely. There is going to be that lag while the airlines try to essentially rebalance against what their known crew liabilities are and reserve statuses. I think I saw a metric somewhere that even post-COVID, crew reserves have to be doubled now just based on the quantity of sick calls and the tightness of the schedule. Even your reserve planning now is being compromised by increased sick time usage. So those dynamics now have changed, and that forces at least short term, many more reductions in flying until you can get caught up. And we're seeing that with market exits, especially on the regional side.
I would add to that, to Jim's point, getting back to the subject of bringing the databases together for aircraft, crew, and passenger itineraries. If you can do that, then all of the data you need is accessible at the same time. Then you can start applying some of the tools used in planning can be adapted to restructure the operation in the event of a irregular ops situation. The planning tools have been effective for several decades. Since the 80s and 90s, the planning tools do a very good job of minimizing the cost that they're given. And so if we can get to the point where we bring the three databases together so that you can apply those same tools to an irregular ops situation, which is not all that different from planning, except that it's a lot faster time frame, and you measure your timing in seconds instead of days. Then I think the industry will be able to produce tools that can optimize those fairly quickly. But the hard part is merging the databases.
From all reports now, we're heading back into some of the busiest months that the industry has seen in terms of volume. Demand seems to be coming back very, very strong. And I think this is probably making airlines, you know, they're both excited at the recovery, but also nervous at their ability to handle it. Jim, you've talked about the compression of the schedule. Is that going to be sustainable, you know, as the volume grows?
I don't think it is. And I think, you know, you're already starting to see, you know, some stresses in the system now. You know, obviously we had a rough holiday season, at least here in the States. You're starting to see capacity constraints now in Europe, you know, Amsterdam with their threat of reducing slot availability, strikes going on here in the States this summer, you know, seeing, you know, longer operational recoveries from irregular operations. So I think, you know, as airlines start to look into the fall and into the winter of 2023, they're going to have to be more conservative with their schedule, at least short term. Predictability is key here. You can't be running delay after delay.
Just to pick up on that predictability, how big a factor is the volatility of demand? I mean, I know it's very commercially disruptive, but is that pushing through into the operating environment in a big way?
One of the difficulties when you get into day of operations or even 2 to 3 days out, you know, as the network planners and revenue management try to gauge the right airplane, you know, just based on demand and what they're seeing, we're running back into all the other constraints that Ira talked about, that it would be great if we had the planning tools. You know, one of the airlines I'm working with, they're looking at gauge changes going from narrow body to wide body to do some hub-to-hub flying. All of the data indicates to the network planners that they should have crew reserves, but by the time they put that into the schedule 7 days out, those crew reserves are gone. And so it's just a constant churn right now as you know, revenue management and network planning tries to meet this demand, but the realities of the operation are, you know, constraining them.
I think it's more of an economic case where there's a shortage of capacity right now. There's pent-up demand. There aren't enough pilots, flight attendants, or most any other staffing category. So over time, those will start to ease somewhat. Maybe prices will come down and maybe they won't, but certainly demand will catch up with, capacity will catch up with demand, and it'll all even out at some point. But it'd be good to even out in a way that promotes, that gives the industry some tools for adjusting to these surges of demand and needs for more traffic accommodation that the industry is going to have going forward. The resiliency needs to be a lot better. And I think everybody would agree with that.
We've had a pretty good rundown of what sounds like a very challenging operating environment at the moment. So talking a little bit about maybe recommendations and solutions, short term, What can airlines be thinking about? You know, a lot of them are going to be right in the middle of their summer flying at the moment. What are the things that they should be looking for kind of short-term fix?
Well, I think, you know, purely on the process side right now, as we talked about, is, you know, having the ability and being able to take a breath from all the irregular operations, having the ability to learn from your op strategy, what were the inputs and what were the outputs. You know, it's a struggle in the operation. You know, have a bad irregular operation. You get 2 days of decent weather, and then boom, you're right back into it. And somehow you're supposed to debrief what happened 2 weeks ago, but you've got to have that rigor. At least, you know, kind of build back that knowledge base with all of the new constraints that airlines are posed with. But there's also work that needs to be done, I think, right now on the technology side. All of the things, the emerging technology now that we're starting to see with machine learning, especially in data mining, would go a long way towards helping airlines predict what may happen to them with irregular operations and how fast they can recover.
And Ira, looking out maybe to sort of medium to long term, where do we think we're going to see either solutions to current problems or significant improvements in overall capability? Where do you feel that's going to come from? Where's the opportunity?
Well, as I mentioned, the integrating the three major databases is the linchpin of all this. I think if airlines treated it like the Manhattan Project or some immensely urgent type of transaction, it could probably be done in 2 years. I think it'll take longer than that because there are all sorts of other problems competing for attention for the senior management. But I think in over 5 to 7 years, I think it'll happen. And in the meantime, I think there's need for some, I'll call it quick and dirty tools, meaning that things that do isolated, narrow analyses that come up frequently that can be done within a particular department, within the op center, the dispatchers, the crew schedulers, the operations controllers, can maybe provide some, I'll call them light tools that will help with that. Won't solve the problem, but it would be better than nothing, and it would be something that they can use. And taking some time, I don't know, 5% seems like a good amount of the time devoted to training. That's probably not too different from what pilots have in terms of recurrent training, of the time you have to spend twice a year going to the simulator and learning some new things. Those things can be done while the long term is in process, and which I think, as I said, will take probably 5 years plus, but hopefully some of these things will be some stepping stones that will help out along the way and get people's attitudes to be thinking in terms of what they can do.
A 2-year investment, a 5-year investment, these are obviously major pieces of work. And this resonates with, I think, a comment Jim made earlier, which was about, you know, calculating the cost of a minute of delay, that kind of thing. This is stuff where business cases are going to need to be built for the investment. What's the best advice we can give to carriers in terms of how do we go and get people engaged with something that's going to be a 2 to 5 year investment?
I have kind of a strong opinion on this subject. All right. If you look at the costs of an irregular operation in terms of passengers who had to be rerouted, passengers who canceled their trips, and all the hotel and meal vouchers you gave out, you look at those costs, those are the hard costs of an irregular operation, you will get a pathetically small number. You can't justify anything based on hard costs of disruption. But I've seen at least one study that showed that the dominant cost is actually how often the customer continues to fly with you after you've disrupted him or her. And that is the dominant cost, somewhere between 65 and 80% of the total cost of an irregular operation. And if you're multiplying the hard cost by 4 or 5, you have some numbers you can actually do something with. So I would urge anybody on the finance side who's looking at the cost of these things to consider costs you can't measure as the dominant. And I'm seeing a lot of carriers say, well, if you can't measure it, then we ignore it, and that's making it zero, and zero is the wrong number. So make your best guess. Your best guess is going to be way better than zero, and proceed on that basis. And I think then you can start justifying some of these investments.
So, Jim, I mean, Iris talked there, long tail soft costs being the missing number in the equation. What would be your advice in terms of where do you go to find this? How do you put that magic number back into the equation?
Yeah, so I was part of an exercise at an airline to do this, to start to cost this out. It really takes a lot of in-depth analysis. You need operational experts, operations analysis people, just in a room thinking of all of the different things that can go and into a delay. And some of the things we came up with is even with a 15-minute delay, that's 15 minutes of aircraft utilization, however that is planned out, that you're not getting. And there is a cost to that. That's how you justify fleet spend. That's how you justify gates. There's a real estate cost. As an airplane is sitting on the gate for an hour, that gate's not available to another inbound flight. That inbound flight may be taking a delay. The problem is, and this goes back to Iris' earlier point at the top of this call, right, is, you know, as you start to look at that cascading effect of a delay or a cancellation, you start to lose sight of what those costs were. You may have that weather delay at your hub that, led to 2 hours of delay and now leads to a 15-minute delay in the morning, you know, as that airplane completes its segments through the day, the previous day, but you're really losing sight of that. And at some point, whoever was coding the delay probably doesn't have that anymore. It just says late arriving aircraft. And you can't point that back to, oh, yeah, we had a thunderstorm yesterday at the hub. So you really have to put a lot of rigor into it. But I think, you know, when we were doing our effort, we had 15 different inputs just on the operations side alone, missed maintenance opportunity, those types of things. But it can, to Ira's point, you know, if you try to prove it just based on the sunk cost of hotel vouchers and misconnecting customers, you just can't get there with some of these big projects.
Something amenable to data analysis, a lot of domain subject matter expertise, but ultimately, you know, quality data and rigorous analysis ultimately.
Yeah.
And bringing the finance people into the discussion and into the analysis is quite important. They have the job of deciding how this investment compares with everything else. And so the more they can understand it, the better off everybody's going to be.
That's great advice. Yeah, engaging finance, definitely. Okay, well, this has been a really fascinating discussion. I think we've covered a huge amount here. I would recommend those people listening, please contact us if you want a copy of Ira and Jim's report. It's a great piece of work. It's very detailed. We'd also like to remind you of a conference that is coming up in September. Please do try and make an effort to attend that. That's going to be a really exciting event this year. Obviously, a huge amount going on in terms of transformation of airline offer and order as well. Until then, and until next time on T2RL Talks, I'd like to say thank you to Jim and thank you to Ira for joining us. Thank you all for listening.